Welcome to MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui, your expert host on all things medical marketing and SEO.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of MedShark Insider. And today I've got a treat for most practices, especially practice owners who are really struggling with probably the hardest thing about running a practice is their people. Today I actually have an expert. He's actually a human behavior expert, people plus purpose. And I want to welcome Matthew Norton. And we're going to talk about the ability and strategies of providers to how you can become a better understander of human behavior when you're building your team and strategies around team building and running a more efficient practice. So welcome, Matthew. I appreciate you joining me today.
It's my pleasure to be with you today, Bill. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So do me a favor and just introduce yourself, give a little background to you, to our audience so they can kind of get an idea of who you are and kind of where you came from.
Well, who I am personal life first is, I think, is always kind of nice. I've been married for almost 33 years. I have five kids and a very complicated blended family and five grandkids spread around the country. I get to live in San Diego, California, even though it's an overcast day today. where my son lives and daughter-in-law. And so that's a wonderful thing. My expertise really is in, I've been using human assessments for 23 years. I have a strong passion for brain science, psychology, human behavior. I like to understand how and why people do what they do, as that, since life is really about relationships, personally and professionally, and what I can contribute to kind of help facilitate better ones. And so People Plus Purpose is my business. And I guess you kind of get the message as to where I'm focusing just based on that name.
Well, super. Hey, thank you for that, Matthew. You know, we actually got introduced from one of my consultant friends, Joanne Tanner, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for as really having been in a practice, having done the actual hands-on work in the practice, as well as a consultant. So I absolutely respect her perspective. And when she says, hey, you got to talk to this guy, he offers something that I think is pretty unique to practices. You know, that's when I started learning a little bit more about what you do and actually took a couple of your assessments and got the feedback. And having done a lot of those, I generally tend to find that they're pretty darn accurate. I mean, especially for practices or people that have never taken these types of tests or assessments, mm-hmm. I found them to be, you know, pretty spot on. I mean, really good. So do me a favor. When you're talking with, say, a practice, a doctor, mm-hmm. most of these doctors have, you know, they're not clinically trained to run a business. I mean, they're there to do dentistry or to right. do plastic surgery or cosmetic. What do you do to help a practitioner when it comes to how to build a better team? What's like the first thing you need to do in terms of having a conversation with them? What do you address?
Well, I kind of just, even to back up 1 second, I wanted to say that I love the title that you picked for this is relationship-based practice building, right? Because you're in the marketing world. And so in that world, practice building is part of what, you know, we want to do, right? We want to, but when you put relationship-based in front of it, then where my mind immediately went is that practice building, from my perspective, flows naturally from people building. But the people building is often what we step over, you know, in terms of thinking I need to market, I need to reach out, I need to get new people in here. But an image that came to me as I was thinking about this is that to me, marketing without developing a winning team is kind of like trying to sell tickets to the community for a football team that's not really winning. You know, so if you can create a winning team, winning, thriving people tend to be an attraction and draw people in. And so where I like to start really is, what are people wanting to accomplish? What is their vision? What is their mission? Where are you going? What do you want this to look like when you get there? And then we can say, and that's really kind of the purpose part. And then we can say, well, who are the people that are going to be the best fit to accompany you on this journey, to be able to support the mission and the vision? And so part of that is being able to get out of a paycheck-driven mission and be able to make that more of a purpose-driven mission. So we're not just competing on, you know, pay and benefits and that sort of thing. We're just trading our time for money, but that we're actually, you know, trading for inspiration. We're trading for contribution. You know, why should people even want to be on your team in the first place? What is it that's going, what's going to change their lives as a result of that, while you're collectively delivering value to other people? Yeah, I guess then the next step is, you know, who are you? Who are you as the leader? Gallup talks about 70% of the variance in team engagement coming directly back to the leadership. So when I'm often brought in to coach and consult, it's because somebody else has a problem. The problem is outside of us. And that's kind of the way we look at life in general anyway. I think it's somewhere else. It's probably not me. So sometimes I'm brought in because there is an office manager that needs to be reined in, that needs to be developed more. You got to do something, right? There's drama happening here. I need your help. And while that's true, what's often missed, in fact, this was just, I'm saying that because this was a recent situation where I was referred to someone because that was what they needed. They thought they needed, but in the process of doing the assessments, right, the owner of the practice started looking at his own reports and scores. And he said, you know, I don't think maybe I'm as good a leader as I, what do you think? Do you think you could help me? Which I thought was a real, you know, a real eye-opening experience for him, and a bit of vulnerability, because it went from, I see the issue all out there, to maybe I need to be better.
Yeah. You know, I think you hit on a couple of things in that. Number one is that a lot of practices do what you just said. They put the cart before the horse, and they're focused on marketing without having a good product. And having been in, you know, the marketing and advertising business for 25 years with medical and dental practices, I generally tend to find that is the biggest void in terms of highly, you know, what I would say, wildly successful practices and mildly successful practices. Okay. The ones that are just off the charts, that have this, you know, other practices look at them and go, man, I don't know how he does it or how she does it, man. They have a practice that is shooting to the moon. And yet we are trying to do everything. I'm trying to do everything I can, but I'm not doing that, what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. And I generally tend to find it is pretty much what you're saying. It is, I don't have the right people. I don't have the right systems. I don't even have the right culture. In this energy that really does start from the top down. I mean, it absolutely, this belief of and really understanding of purpose or that brand, who are we? What do we want to be? I think practices really need to take a step back, identify that. And I think you can help people do that because I think generally tend to think they think of themselves as, oh, we're just a dental practice or we're just a plastic surgery practice. There's nothing special about us, but quite frankly, there has to be.
Right.
You know, if there's not, then you're just going to continue to be, you know, an also-ran when it comes to, you know, a practice that is just limping along or really not achieving its potential.
Yeah, and unless you want to compete on price, which you can, I mean, that's one option, but I don't know most people that I talk to raise their hands to say, yes, competing to be the cheapest is really my greatest desire. So you're right. You do need to compete based upon what is your unique, compelling contribution. And yet, how many people have not taken the time to really clarify that? And we're striving hard, we're pushing, we're racing to try to get somewhere, but we really have often not clarified exactly where there is, that if we keep working this hard, we're going to get there. And if we don't know where there is, we also don't know who exactly is going to be the best fit to help us get there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that our people are our greatest business asset. They're clearly the largest, in most practices, the largest monthly outlay is for paying a team, right? And yet so many people I talk to, it's like, well, all these things are important, right? We need to have marketing. We need to have systems, processes, technology, software. Mm-hmm. We need all of these things. But often what gets stepped over as we're trying to build value, either just for greater with a thought of, well, these are the things that are going to give me the greater profitability, or I'm going to build it to a point and sell it. You know, whatever that is, mm-hmm. the people aspect gets stepped over all of the time so that they're not really an asset. They're not really an investment that you're making. They're simply a cost and often seem to be like these interchangeable pieces on a chessboard, like there's somebody filling a position. Mm-hmm. And I think isn't that good enough? I don't really understand why that wouldn't be good enough.
Yeah. And I think you kind of touch on a point. I mean, the underlying message with that point is people are not tools. People are relationships. And I think those practices that really do shoot to the moon, they really embrace their people in this team environment. That's where you get people to not only just stay a long time, and I don't just say longevity of a staff is the barometer for a healthy practice. In fact, sometimes it's not. But it's the contribution and the dynamics of that team that really, you know, make it continually adapt to changes in the marketplace, to changes in consumer behaviors, to technology and services that a practice may offer. And you use one of your assessments talks about emotional agility. I love that terminology, emotional agility. But I think it's that. It's how do you get people and recruit the right people and nurture those people in a way that fits within your culture, within the practice goals and visions, that they are an actively contributing and feel like they're part of something bigger than just a position or a paycheck, as you kind of identify.
Yeah. Well, I mean, pretty much every practice that I coach has people issues. Mm-hmm. And some of them are extreme and clear obstacles to the doctors. I mean, they know they can't hide from it anymore. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of times where there's issues and they're not really fully aware of that. Sometimes there's some real dawning awakenings as we have conversations and as we even draw in some key leaders or other team members to get input into the mix. It's like, well, what they said, I'm not sure what the doctor said. I'm not sure that's the whole story that you're getting because everybody has their angle on it, right? Everybody has a different perception as to what's happening. And I think you're right. I mean, as far as I've worked with some genius, smart doctors who are incredibly skill set savvy, right? But there wasn't much time dedicated to becoming great business people much of the time, but that gets talked about a fair amount. But in terms of them being leaders of people, in terms of their own emotional agility, like you say, I mean, I have so many that where they're wrestling with that, and that can be the biggest impediment. And especially when it's confusing sometimes, because when you look at it from, you know, so many doctors are trained and taught on the rational, intellectual, informational side of things. And there's often this human piece that has been underdeveloped because that's not where the focus has been. It's not necessarily their fault. It's just that nobody's worked with them on that. But the truth of it is that practices are not like singles tennis, right? This is a team sport, more like football. And so we need a group of people who are highly skilled with different skills, right? Different strengths to be able to navigate down the field and get this thing into the end zone. And we need to know what's reasonable to expect. So when you say before, like hiring, or maybe that was before we actually got started talking about like who we hire, and we hire because we like somebody, they seem like a good person, they've got a good resume, they interviewed well, but do we know that they're, what are we hiring them for? What is the role specifically we're hiring them for? And how do we know if they're going to be a good fit for that? Rarely are practices benchmarking the strengths necessary to thrive in the role. If you ask them, well, what, you know, it's like we're starting from scratch going, well, let's see, it seems like it would be good if they could, but they've never really clarified that exactly. And then they're not, they don't have a process for being able to then see what strengths does this person uniquely bring that would be a great match for those benchmarked roles. So it's not, there's no intentionality, which when you think about it, relative to all the other things being done in a healthcare practice with intentionality, a diagnostic conclusion as to what's going on and what's our treatment plan, why are we not applying some more of that diligent diagnostic diligence when it comes to the humans that we're going to do it with?
You know, that's a great point. And to really, to maybe so that our audience can get some really tangible, you know, insights. Let's take, for example, and I'll just have you give me some perspective. Let's take one of those key roles that you talked about. Let's say in most practices that I work with, the two people that have the biggest ultimate impact in terms from a marketing standpoint. Number one, it is the practice administrator, as well as I would call it their, you know, in my mind, it's their salespeople. It is their patient care counselor or patient coordinator, whatever you want to call them. But they're the ones that actually deal with new patients and new leads and actually do the consults and things like that. So those would be two positions. So say, for example, I've got a sales position, and I think more medical practices are embracing that terminology. I need a salesperson. They recognize elective medical, elective dental treatments. I'm competing with Best Buy. I'm competing with, you know, the trip to Jamaica or wherever it is after this pandemic's over with. That's where that's what I'm competing with. So if I'm looking for a salesperson, how do you talk to or how do you go about helping a practice, number one, identify, do they have the right person there? And if we don't, how do we find that person?
Well, you know, this I mentioned to you about, it's a good question, and I mentioned before we started about this core four of assessments. I've been using assessments 23 years, but I've developed nine of my own over the last few years, of which there's a core four that I think are incredibly insightful, four different human dimensions that we're looking at to see where are the strengths, where is the fulfillment for the person, right? But also where are they going to thrive in the role that you're wanting to hire them for? And they each have a different lend some different qualities. So when we're talking about that, we could say, for example, is the person, like most salespeople, when you look at their inspiration sources, that's one of the assessments. You didn't take that one, but it really tells what people value. Where is their fulfillment found? When they look out at the world, what are they drawn to? What do they need to be touching and experiencing on a regular basis? So, and when you look at those, one of them is challenge or achievement. And so typically what we would want to see, because that's a goal-oriented person, that is a person that wants to get a return on investment. Somebody who is willing to give, put themselves out there, but they're looking for a return. So from a sales perspective, that's something that would be important. They're gauging their effectiveness based on goal achievement, and they're willing to take some risks typically to get there. So that would be one. You could also have some other supplementary ones, like are they contribution focused? That might be helpful, but that might not be helpful sometimes as you look at some of the other pieces. Are they connection relationship focused? Right. That can be a great combination to go with challenge achievement. If you switch over to our action approaches assessment, which is a more behavioral, how do you do things, not what are you inspired by, but how do you go about doing things, then is the person you're looking at, are they more introverted versus extroverted, more task oriented versus people oriented? There's some different combinations there. You would tend to want to have somebody more extroverted for a sales position rather than introverted. There's always going to be trade-offs, right? There's probably less detail ability. They're going to need some organizational guidance to support their sales approach. But you want them reaching out to people. If you have a people-oriented extrovert, then that person is going to be wanting to take ideas and promote and share them with people. And if you could back that up with, and we call that the influential communicator, and if you can back that up with some bold achiever, that task-oriented extrovert that's willing to take on the risks, that's willing to be more competitive, more, again, more goal-oriented, more bottom-line results-driven, those combinations are going to be more effective. Now, every one of these has its strength contributions and its downside risk possibilities in there, or even just overextensions of those qualities, right? And so yeah, it's important to be aware of those.
Yeah, no, I think actually when you're talking about the overextension, you know, somebody that can be very personable and outgoing, that kind of stuff, they can also be construed as being too talkative. Right. Never gets to the point, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or that old achiever that's too, comes across feeling like they're too pushy, too confrontational, that sort of.
Yeah, so everything can be done in extremes. But I think the personality or their strengths, their profile strengths, I think you, as long as they recognize those things, they don't know what they don't know half the time, and they don't know why they're doing what they're doing. They just, it's just part of their being. But I think if they're a little more conscious about it, I think they can leverage those strengths and minimize those weaknesses to the point where they can be more productive in what they do, and quite frankly, get better results and enjoy it more.
Right. It's true. And so like the two that typically help define the role are the one I just mentioned in terms of the action approach, right? And also cognitive styles, which was one of the two that you took, which is a little bit less frequently used, something to that effect, whether the person is more of a big picture thinker or a detailed thinker. And then are they more idea focused, more process focused, more action focused, or more relationship focused? And so when you begin to look at these different combinations about, well, how do I naturally think? How do I naturally act? And then add that to what inspires me. Where is my fulfillment? Why would I stay here? Like, I may be great for you, but why will I stay? Are you rewarding my driving inspiration sources in this position? Do you know what they are? Do you know how to help me be fulfilled here? And these things are not always, these are often not intuitively accomplished, right? There needs to be, again, some intentionality behind it. And these are learned languages. In fact, which makes me think too, that a lot of times people will use an assessment, usually just one and not multiple dimensions, right, which I think is a bit short-sighted, but as I've, you know, heard growing up, better than a sharp stick in the eye. They'll also use it just for a quick decision. Am I going with this person or not? Or sometimes they use assessments as a team building activity, as a one-off, interesting, fun. Yeah, that was great for bonding, but it never gets worked into the culture. And I think this is one of the biggest tragedies, is we can know, we can better understand people. We can therefore better communicate, resolve conflict, collaborate better together by knowing these things. So if we can build a language and a framework for the culture that speaks strengths-based, where all the team members know, we put charts together for teams so that they can begin to, and all of this information is given to all the team members so that they now understand themselves better. These are my strengths. These are the areas where I may struggle a bit. Here's my teammates' strengths. But also when you look like at yours, when you looked at your report on the cognitive styles, we need a team that has these different complementary contributions, but they really are like different languages. So how do the handoffs occur? A lot of the tension and friction in teams occurs because I don't get you. I don't see why you think like that, why you see it this way. And there's no training as to how to bridge across so we're complementing rather than colliding.
So you're actually recommending as practices go through these assessments is that they're shared with the team members. It's not like something that you keep to yourself. Ooh, I got my thing and now I know about myself and I just kind of keep it to myself. I think that's one of the challenges, yes, is that we're not really open to letting people know who we are and how we, you know, what our strengths and weaknesses are many times. It makes us, as you kind of pointed out earlier with a doctor that says, you know what, it may be me, you know, it makes them a little more vulnerable.
Yeah.
By sharing that. We actually did a similar thing where we actually had a printout of our profiles and we had it outside of everybody's office. Their profile is, mm-hmm, is out in public right outside, mm-hmm, their office, mm-hmm, so that, you know, people can kind of get an idea of who they are, what are their, you know, what their strengths are, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't as sophisticated as what you did, but it was, you know, in general,
sure,
you can kind of get an idea of who this person is, how to communicate with them, what are their styles. So there was an education process that went along, not just for the doctor, but for all the staff members to really understand, you know, these different personas or life, you know, right, you know, processes that people, how they think, how, right, they act, what they, yeah, do.
Right.
So I thought that was really insightful.
Yeah, thanks. I to me, it's a sad waste of opportunity because these are new learned skill sets, right? Like if I'm gonna, I see it all around service. You know, we're serving patients, but we're also, mm-hmm, serving our team members. And I think we step over the team way too often to focus on, right, patients. I tell people all the time, your team is more important than your patients. They would push back sometimes and say, yeah, well, without patients, there's no need for a team. I say, without a great team, you're never going to be able to serve those patients optimally in the, yeah, first place. If they leave after all the work you put into it. So, yeah. But if we can help people be able to build it into a language to where I know what I can, what should I reasonably expect from my teammates? Mm-hmm. If I'm serving them, what do they need? Service is about not just me. I don't serve through my preferences. I serve through their preferences. What works best for them? Do I even know? Do mm-hmm. I care? If I don't care, then I would question somebody's real commitment to service. If I right. care, but I don't understand, then okay, then let's see if I can understand you more so that I can help make sure you get what you need. It's the same mm-hmm. thing in marriage. I see it the same way. My wife yeah. and I actually provide marriage coaching too, which was, that came as an afterthought, so to speak, but it's the same thing. And we use these assessments in marriages because we're attracted to somebody for much more casually, emotively driven reasons, yeah. but our ability to work out an awesome relationship for a long period of time requires much more depth and much yeah. more ability to, you know, to work through differences.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the real takeaway that I'm getting from our conversation today is practices really do need to focus more on the personal, behavioral side of business and practice development, more so than just the a spreadsheet or their profit loss sheets. So I guess the main thing was, I didn't realize that a lot of you require your providers to actually do the assessment? Because I get a lot of this, well, I'll let them do it. You know, I'll let them take it. I don't need an assessment. I need their assessment. I need to know what they're doing, you know.
Well, that, which is a good, okay. So there's a couple of things there. It's a really good question. And so on my simplest answer is yes. If you as the doctor, owner, or key leaders that you have are not interested in understanding yourself better, seeing how to be a better leader in this process, or how your styles are going to intersect with the styles and strengths of the other people, then I'm probably not the best coach to work with. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I've often said I'm not an assessment company, but I am an assessment guided company. And if I've had people tell me for years, well, how do you know all this about me? And you've told me more about who I am in one conversation than people who've known me my whole life. In fact, you know me better than I know me. And some have said it's a little creepy kind of. I say, no, well, it's just all I've done is ask you to reveal more of who you are to me through these assessments. Why, if I could cheat like that in being able to help you better, why would I not want to?
Right.
Why would I not do that? And so it also, the other thing that comes up is team. Like when people are hiring, as I mentioned, we put together charts for practices so mm-hmm. that we can say, okay, here's the doctors, here's the existing team. And then when we have candidates, we add them temporarily to the charts so that we're not just hiring for a role fit, we're hiring for a team fit. What does the team need? And then also once we see that on there, people will often say, I'm having some challenges with so-and-so. I'm not understanding, or I'm not able to get them to engage this new initiative or this change that we want. Can you help me with that? Well, if I know the whole team, I can tell you exactly what's going on, and I can tell you exactly how you need to approach that person to get them to say yes to what you're wanting. What do they need? You're yelling louder in your own language rather than trying to understand their language.
Right. Yeah. All great points. A question then. For the practices that really are committed to make a difference, to change what they're doing, to recognize that there are ways that the provider can improve as well as their team and their practice as a whole can benefit by more behavioral assessments and understanding
how we all work together and putting the right people in the right places so that they can succeed. For those practices, how can they reach out to you? What is the best way for them to, if they want to talk to you about what you can do, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Thank you. I mean, the best way, if you're actually ready for a breakthrough, if you want some insight, then you can go to my website, People Plus Purpose, spelled out peopleplus purpose.com. And right on the homepage, there is a big button that allows you to schedule a free 20-minute breakthrough call. And we can either use that to take one issue that's going on and take 20 minutes and focus on that for a breakthrough. And we'll get a breakthrough in 20 minutes.
Right.
Or we can use it for a conversation to explore what's the story that's going on, what are your overall concerns or what are your goals, and then talk about what could be done about that. If somebody's not ready for a conversation and they need to walk into things a little bit more gradually, so I can do my research before we talk, what, you know, everybody's different in that regard.
Right.
Then you can also go to peopleplus purpose.com/hiringblueprint.
Okay.
Get my foolproof hiring blueprint. It's free. And there's some valuable information for hiring, but it'll also help reframe a little bit the conversation about teams thriving together, even beyond the hiring aspect. So peopleplus purpose.com/hiring blueprint. And then that may then inspire a desire for a conversation.
I would
assessments
say
are not, assessments are not expensive. Sometimes people tell me, I don't know. It's like, to me, once you see what the possibilities are, it is a wonderful investment of a bit of time and a bit of money that will change the game of your practice forever.
Right.
I promise that.
Right. Well, I absolutely encourage, you know, my clients as well as, you know, practitioners that may be watching this interview, at least start looking at the hiring, because I know that's the biggest challenge that they have. They always have problems with hiring and turnover, especially on really key positions. At least start there. Mm-hmm. Matthew, I want to thank you for your time today. And I absolutely got a lot out of our conversations and the assessments that I took. Thank you very much for all of that. I'll look forward to having more conversations with you.
Great, great. I'll look forward to it. Thank you for bringing me on and giving me the opportunity to share my passion, and trusting it'll make a difference in someone's life. So
that sounds great. You have a great afternoon, Matthew.
Thank you.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui. Join us next week for another dive into all things medical marketing. All episodes can be streamed at www.medsharkdigital.com/medshark-insider.